Our first case is Zelspin Soft v. Canon and Garmin, 2020-1947. Mr. Gartheiser,
yes,
please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of Zelspin to reverse the decision of the Board. And this appeal, 20-1947, is also related to a companion appeal, 20-1948. And with that, I just want to start by saying that I know I don't have time to address all the issues, and in particular, some of the constitutional law issues. So in light of Arthrex 2 and New Vision Gaming recently from the court, we're going to rest on our papers with respect to the constitutional law issues. What we do want to focus on here today, though, is claims 5 and 8 and the disputed term paired wireless connection. With respect to the term paired wireless connection, in essence, the board didn't construe it correctly. And the reason why is they kind of have a circular argument about Bluetooth. They know, they seem to understand that the specification relies heavily on Bluetooth to enable what was known in the art at the time. This situation happened in 2007 when this application was filed. And in 2007, there was no App Store, there was no Android Store, and you still had flip phones with screens, not GUIs. And that's important because, as you'll see, the board eventually doesn't address all the issues. And with respect to the definition of pairing, what we have is a situation where they need to define what pairing is in a way that doesn't include everything that's a wireless connection. So they basically read out the word pairing.
Can I ask you, is it possible for there to be a wireless connection without an advance agreement?
Yes.
Without a mutual agreement, yes.
Yes.
So that mutual agreement is part of the claim construction, am I remembering that right?
It is.
So why doesn't that run counter to your suggestion that the board read pairing out of the claim? Because it's not just any connection. It's one in which there's mutual agreement, which you said doesn't have to be the case for there to be a connection.
Thank you, Judge Toronto, for that question. And it's an excellent one. And with pairing, you have to be able to connect and reconnect. And that's the problem with the court's construction. They act like that's an additional limitation. And under BRI, they say, well, we don't want to read that additional limitation that has to be able to connect and reconnect into the definition of pairing because the specification doesn't support it. But this specification
doesn't require it.
Doesn't. That's what they, okay. But the specification was written by a person of ordinary skill or for a person of ordinary skill in the art. And it was done in 2007. And we have the honor to have the Bluetooth CEO of the standard that was over the Bluetooth standard during this period. And he explained that pairing was optional. And to your initial question, can you have a wireless connection? Yes. And there's other ways to send out without it being paired via Bluetooth, like the beacon, as we mentioned in our papers.
Could you, I just want to make sure I understand your answer to Judge Toronto's question. As I understand it, you argue the board's construction reads the word paired out of the claim term.
Yes.
But you've conceded that the board's requirement requires mutual agreement between the two things that are talking to each other.
That's step one.
Okay, but why is that not at least responsive fully to your contention that paired is read out of the term by the board?
Because as examples we give out in our table, it would include way too many communications. It's so broad that it encompasses everything. Therefore, it's just a wireless connection. The connection itself is between two devices that want to talk.
Okay, but it doesn't include when two devices haven't previously agreed that they want to talk, right? I mean, I think that was your answer, that there has to be mutual agreement.
No, there doesn't have to be mutual agreement.
Well, under the board's construction, there does, right? Isn't that part of the board's construction?
It's part of the board's construction, but again, being able to store information, to be able to connect and reconnect, and even in that, to be able to identify who it is, you need to know, have something stored already. So whether you want to kind of address it the back way, but you still have to know something about that device to be able to connect with it again. And that was very common in the art. And real quick on that, our proposed construction says it has to provide for encrypted data exchange. That doesn't mean that it has to do it, but it has to be able to do it. And that goes back to connections that are secure and unsecure, but they're both paired. Paired, authentication, cryptographic, they're all separate meanings. All terms have different meanings. And without being able to reconnect, without establishing the node, then you just basically can't get back to the device.
The board was supposed to give us the broadest reasonable interpretation of this term, right?
Correct, okay. Under BRI.
So, and I think we'll all agree it was broad, but what makes it unreasonable?
It's that it includes too much. It reads out the word pairing. And for pairing, I think it's best addressed when we talk about how you need to store some information so that you can reconnect again. So the ability to connect and reconnect, whether it's your nowadays, you know, in hindsight, it seems very obvious. But at the time, you know, your headphone set or even your car is syncing up to your phone, it has to be able to remember that. And that's only because it has stored a certain PIN or certain additional information about that node. Before I run out of time, I want to get to the other part, and that's claim 5 and 8. So the term we just talked about, that impacts all the claims. But claim 5 and 8, we have a real problem here, and it's been already addressed. So, and what I mean by that is it's been addressed in NRA Varma. So claims 5 and 8 need to be found valid, and the board needs to be reversed on the basis of In Re Varma. And what we have here is a mobile software application. And we appreciate the opportunity to be heard today on this issue by an Article 3 judge panel. And basically, after SAS, the Supreme Court mentioned or indicated that, you know, the board, the PTAB board, has to deal with the petition that they get. They can't create the petition they want to address. So they have to address all the claims, and they have to address all the arguments that are made in that IPR. Here we're dealing with two IPRs, one with Panasonic, one with Canon. But with respect to Canon, the board starts to kind of shift the arguments. And we explain this as we go through. And what I mean by that is they don't address the clear dispute on whether a mobile software application involves one or more or just one mobile software application. If you look at the claim language in context, as Judge Toronto penned in In Re Varma, you'll see that...
That's the one about the dog and the tricks?
That's right, yes. and the dog's got to be able to do more than one, let's say, trick.
I think.
Task, yes. And so here, one single mobile application has to do all six tasks. And that's not what we have here in the prior art. So the prior art can't be used to then invalidate this claims 5 and 8.
And did the board find that even under your view that a single application has to do all of the listed things that the prior art taught that?
The board found that, but it's unclear how they could find that, because they mentioned Hirashi being able to do all the different elements, but they leave out Takahashi. And they also, if you look at the opposition at page 42, or the response of Canon at page 42, they have a quote at the bottom.
And this is in the red brief?
Yes. And it's appendix 241 that they're citing. And basically, they're citing the claim language of claim 5. The problem is it's not complete. And that's where it all kind of goes awry. But ultimately, the board doesn't address the GUI to delete. And earlier, I got ahead of myself, and I was talking about how in 2007, again, there's no app store. You have a flip phone that has a screen. A GUI is a phone that you can interact with. And, you know, you touch it. And GUI to delete, there's a note, means that you interact with the graphical user interface to make the files that you now uploaded deleted, not on just the phone, not on the phone, but on the actual camera. And stepping back from all this, there was no teaching to really combine these things at the time. It was very novel, and adding an additional step of, instead of just going straight from the camera, you go to a phone first and then to the internet was very novel.
Counsel, you're well into your rebuttal time. You can use it or continue as you save it, or continue as you wish.
Thank you, Your Honor. One last point I want to make. The board's decision fails to even mention or discuss the sixth element, this GUI to delete, and that's reversible, or that's what I wanted to point out. And I believe that because at the bottom of page 42, it's truncated when Canon cites the appendix 241. So looking at table A, it's clear that they relied on more than just this one piece of prior art. And in closing, I just want to say that I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And Judge Lori, I had the honor to clerk with you a long time ago, but interview, and meant a lot. So it's nice to be here 20-something years later. Thank you.
Mr. Gotthauser. Mr. Newton. Please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Jared Newton. May it please the court. I'm here for the appellees. I've divvied up time with counsel for the intervener, and so I'm going to have 10 minutes in my argument. I'll start with the first issue that was discussed, which is the board's construction of paired wireless connection. And I think it's important to understand the two things that the board did here. First, they rejected CellSpin's construction. They correctly rejected it because it was trying to violate a basic principle of claim construction law, which is we don't read limitations. We don't go pick them out of the specification itself or out of the extrinsic evidence, which CellSpin did here, and then read them into the claim language absent, you know, clear lexicography, disavowal of their definitional language that requires you to do that. There is none of that in the specification or in the extrinsic evidence here, as the board correctly found. First, they explained that CellSpin's construction, these two features that they were trying to read into the claims and the specification, are taken directly from the Bluetooth standard. But the specification very clearly says the claims and this pairing process is not limited to Bluetooth. So that was strike one. Strike two, the board looked at this idea of, well, is there some basis to read in the requirement of providing for encrypted data exchange? They looked at the claims. There's nothing about encryption of data. It talks about the data that's transmitted between the phone and the camera, but it doesn't ever say that data needs to be encrypted. And the specification is the same thing. It mentions encryption once, but that's a completely different discussion. It's unrelated to pairing. And for reference, that's in column 10, line 60. And then the third strike is that the board did the same thing with respect to Selspin's argument that you need to build in this requirement of connection and reconnection. They again looked at the claim, said they focus on the initial pairing process. They're not concerned with connecting and reconnecting over and over again. So we're not going to read that limitation into the claims. So the board was correct in rejecting Selspin's construction. And even if we kind of look beyond the intrinsic record, we can see that the extrinsic evidence doesn't support Selspin's construction either. They pointed to the Bluetooth standard, and again, that's improper because the specification says it's not limited to Bluetooth. But even the two features they pulled out of that standard are not mandatory features within Bluetooth. There's at appendix...
Can I just ask this? So this may not be... Well, the term pairing, at least to this reader, doesn't have a self-evident meaning about what that means other than communicate with. It suggests it means something more than communicate with. So we're not in the realm of needing lexicography or clear disclaimer. We would look at the spec to tell us something about what the understood meaning of the term pairing is, unless, you know, there were, you know, clear extrinsic evidence about the usage of that term in the field, and I don't think we've been presented with evidence about that. So you would look at the spec, and the spec maybe focuses on Bluetooth. Even if it's not limited to Bluetooth, what it says about Bluetooth might actually be the most informative thing about what the more general term pairing meant.
So I don't disagree with that as a general matter. The specification certainly talks about, you know, describes the implementation of the invention in Bluetooth and then goes on to say, hey, you can use these other technologies. But the way I think about it and the way the board thought about it is that the Bluetooth is the how. How do you do pairing in Bluetooth? But the what is pairing? And that's where the board pointed to that passage in the specification. It's column 3, lines 60 through 63. And they said... Pairing, the baseline of pairing is this mutual agreement between the two devices that want to communicate. That's support is taken directly out of the spec, so it's consistent with the spec. It's consistent with Bluetooth, to your point, which is Bluetooth is informative for understanding what pairing means. It's just not XYZ features that I find in the Bluetooth standard necessarily have to be incorporated into pairing. And that's what the board...
I guess the thought that was in my mind is that the crucial thing is what the spec either... does or doesn't do by way of support for the board's mutual agreement understanding, and the idea that that mutual agreement understanding does give some meaning to the term. It's not so much that the various proposals that the patent owner suggested were wrong. That is, that's you can't limit the inquiry, the challenge to the claim construction to the reasons that the board rejected the patent owner's proposal.
I understand, and that's why I started with kind of there were two things they did. They rejected Selspin's construction, which was very clear. They weren't going to import those two requirements. But then they provided extensive support for their mutual agreement construction. They pointed to column 3 of the specification, which describes it in the context of Bluetooth. They also went on to say... Bluetooth has various ways you can pair. Bluetooth, one of them is a passkey, for example. In Appendix 14, the board said, okay, if you're using a passkey, yes, that's one way you've established pairing, if you have the exchange. But it also said, we're not going to do what Selspin's asking us to do and read in these additional requirements because the baseline of pairing is this mutual agreement. And so they got...
What's the concrete technical thing that mutual agreement does?
There's very helpful extrinsic evidence to explain this. It's at Appendix 2746. It's the Zigbee standard, which is one of the standards that the specification specifically covers for this pair to establish this paired arrangement. But what the Zigbee standard does is it first provides a pretty clear statement that pairing is the process by which devices establish bidirectional communication links with other devices. And then it goes on to talk about this concept of mutual agreement where you have one device saying, hey, I want to talk to you, and the other device responding and saying, okay, yeah, you can communicate with me. We'll exchange information. And the importance, the technical importance of that mutual agreement is that I'm communicating with who I want to communicate with, and I don't have outsiders coming in and just trying to interrupt our conversation or send me something, information or data that I don't want. And the Zigbee standard talks about it in the context of pairing a television with a remote control. If I'm at my house and I have the television on, I know my remote control is going to, because it's paired with my television, it's going to allow me to change the channel. But a friend can't come over with their own remote control and try to take over my TV and change the channel because they're not paired. That's the mutual agreement between that I have with the TV that my friend does not.
Did the board cite this? Is it Exhibit 2003?
Yes, the board cited it at Appendix 16. So, in summary, we think the board's construction of paired wireless connection is correct. There's no argument in the briefing from CellSpin that the prior art does not meet the board's construction, does not disclose a paired wireless connection under the board's construction. And in any event, it's a substantial evidence standard. The board cited extensive evidence to explain why both references we relied on as primary references, Hiroshi and Holstrom, disclose a paired wireless connection.
Did the board analyze whether there was substantial evidence for obviousness if one were to adopt the construction of the patent owner?
The board did not get into that. So I think fairly, if the panel were to adopt Zelspin's construction, remand would probably be the appropriate. I do think there's enough evidence in the record here. We had a reply brief where we did address Zelspin's construction, and it's basically, it's obvious to use Bluetooth. We had expert testimony documents to support that. So I think there's plenty of evidence in the record, but understand if a remand would be the appropriate course. Turning to claims 5 and 8, counsel, his argument was limited to the legal question of the claim construction about whether A should be interpreted as one or more, consistent with the general rule that we see in the KCJ case and Baldwin Graphics. Before getting to that, I want to explain that in this case, you really don't need to get there. And there's two reasons why. As I mentioned, we had two primary references that we relied on in the proceeding below. We had Hiroshi, grounds 1 through 4, Holstrom, grounds 5 through 6. Our petition said for both references, they meet all the limitations of claims 5 and 8. We provided expert testimony on the point. We cited passages. And we said that they meet it under the plain language of the claim. So under this concept that Salzman wants to advance, that A should be limited to singular. With respect to Holstrom, Holstrom has almost the exact same figure that we see in the 698 patent.
Did the board make a finding to the effect that Holstrom teaches this limitation even under Salzman's construction?
It made a finding that it was undisputed under Cellspin's construction, because Cellspin never challenged the Holstrom reference. They couldn't, because figure 2 of Holstrom, it's at appendix 1363, has the same client application with submodules inside of it that's in figure 2 of the 698 patent. And Cellspin had the opportunity to address that in their patent owner response and in their reply brief. They didn't.
Right. Ordinarily, so what the board said, it is undisputed that Holstrom teaches a single, program, application?
Software application.
Application that performs all of the listed functions.
I think they said it in the context of claims 5 and 8. They didn't go to each limitation by limitation, but they said, here are the limitations that are not disputed. That was kind of the section of their final written decision, was to basically say, here's where the disputes are, we're resolving them. Here's what's not disputed. And the site to the waiver, which is appendix it's appendix 598 through 599. Basically, because Holstrom was our second reference, Cellspin didn't spend as much time on it. So they provided two pages of analysis in their patent.
What pages of the board's opinion should I be looking at to see what you're saying the board said?
Sure. It's appendix 55 through 56, where they identify the waiver on the part of Cellspin, and they say, patent owner's argument does not differentiate between the independent claims. So they didn't present any claims that were different, or any arguments that were different for claims 5 and 8 that they hadn't presented for claim 1.
Counsel, as you see, your time is up. And we'll hear from the government now.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Josh Handel on behalf of intervener Kathy Vidal. For the reasons set out in our briefs and our two recent 28J letters, the limited issues on which the government is participating in this litigation are either squarely foreclosed by recent circuit precedent, administratively forfeited, or otherwise meritless. I'm happy to address any questions that the Court may have about the constitutional or APA issues.
Which issues, if any, are not covered by our most recent Arthrex Plus Mobility Works?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So I believe the outstanding issues are the APA issues relating to the proceedings on remand, specifically the promulgation of guidance for seeking director rehearing.
The argument that there had to be a formal regulation for that process to occur. Okay.
Correct, Your Honor. That argument, the director's use of an advisory committee to solicit advice from subordinates with respect to rehearing requests, and then the absence of a standalone statement of reasons accompanying the denial of director rehearing.
Well, the argument about the advisory, using advisors to resolve particular petitions for rehearing, or advisors to determine what the process should be?
Using advisors to resolve particular petitions for rehearing. I'm happy to address any of those in greater depth if the panel has questions. Otherwise, we'll rest on our submissions and respectfully request that you deny Salzman's challenges to the PTO's procedures. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Newton, since your joint time has not been exhausted as appellee, do you have anything further you wish to say?
Thank you, Judge Lurie. I will make just two more quick points on the Claim 5 and 8 argument. With respect to Hiroshi, which was the second reference, so Salzman waived his arguments with respect to Holstrom. With respect to Hiroshi, the second reference, they did make an argument under Claims 5 and 8, but the board found that there was substantial evidence, that Hiroshi discloses a mobile software application to the same extent that the 698 patent discloses it. And so that's a substantial evidence finding under Salzman's proposed interpretation of the claims.
It's a finding that we review for substantial evidence support. The board doesn't make it under a substantial evidence standard. It makes it under a preponderance standard.
Yes, Judge Serrano, I apologize if I misspoke. But the standard of review for that finding is a substantial evidence standard. We believe that because the board pointed to the relevant passages of Hiroshi, including paragraph...
And you think that that finding resolves the issue without regard to whether A means one or more, or only if it means one or more?
I believe it resolves the issue under either proposed construction, because what the board did was they said Hiroshi teaches the same type of setup that we see in the 698 patent. And then briefly, I'll just turn to the legal question or the claim construction question about whether A means one or more. There was reference to the Varma opinion, which I understand you penned, Judge Toronto. And this case is entirely different from Varma because there was...
Is there something in the spec of this patent that says when we use the word A, we mean one or more?
No, there's not. And that's precisely the point. In Varma, you had the claim language, which tied this statistical analysis formula to two or more investments specifically. And then in the specification of Varma, you had a distinction that the court pointed to between doing the statistical analysis on a single investment versus two investments. And the opinion said that distinction is important. There's nothing like that in the 698 patent where they draw some distinction and say, oh, one software application is different somehow, or more inventive, or more important than multiple software applications. And then the other thing you had in Varma was the prosecution history, where the applicant specifically relied on the claim language and the idea that you had a correspondence to two or more investments. They relied on that to distinguish the prior art. There's nothing like that here in the prosecution history of the 698 patent, where they said...
I'm sorry, can I just interrupt? So in column 10, lines 19 and following, and then lines 31 and following. There's, for example, the 31 and the following says, a processor means any one or more microprocessors. Why isn't that actually a specification statement that the singular here, we mean to include one or more?
Well, first, that's talking about processor specifically, not the claim term software application.
Okay.
And so I don't think it's
necessarily carries over.
Right, and it's not a broad statement one way or the other that, you know.
It would be helpful to you if it did, right?
Well, if there was, of course, a blanket statement that said every time we say A, we mean one or more, that would be great. And so they said it with respect to processor. Processor is computer technology close to software application. And we see that in the case law, like 01 communique case, where we're talking about this type of computer technology. We're often drawing boxes, and that's really what they did here. You look at figure two, it's a big box with a bunch of smaller boxes inside.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gartheiser has some rebuttal time left.
Thank you, Your Honor. At the last there, one or more is used in some claim languages, some claims, just not five and eight. So when they wanted to use one or more, or more than one, they know how to do it. And as the court just pointed out in the specification, it also appears in the claim language. We have that in our brief. With respect to pairing, the example that Canon provided is a good one, because your TV remote works with your TV because it's already, they know each other, as you said. There's a mutual agreement. And when you turn off your TV and then you come back tomorrow, it remembers your remote, the TV, because they have stored something about that other node that allows them to connect. That's why they're paired. And without something being stored to help you identify who you are speaking to through this wireless connection, you're not going to remember who you were speaking to. And so you've got to store something. And Dr. Foley does a great job of explaining that. And going back to the whole patent talks about the need for one application to do all six things. And those are laid out completely. Your clerks will respect page 9 of the opening brief. There's a great diagram there that talks about the flow of information. And the bottom part of that whole chart is missing because the board failed to even address the GUI to delete function. There's a lot of talk by Canon about, well, the board just says that it does it all. And that's why we have, thankfully, an Article 3 review of this administrative decision. It's conclusory, it's wrong, and you can't say it does it when you don't even address that how it does the GUI to delete. And to the extent that there's an argument that CellSpin waived its right, they cited a lot of prior art. There's eight pieces altogether, but with respect to Hiroshi, we explain that in detail at pages 41 to 43 of our opening brief about how it Hiroshi does not do all, they never even said Hiroshi did all the steps, or Hiroshi. Sorry. So there's just, on page 43, we talk about how the application is configured to do all six steps. And the board just ignores what the GUI has to do. And again, I think that might be related to how that quote was truncated. I didn't get the honor to clerk with Judge Lori, but I did clerk for Judge Ware and Judge McKelvey. And when you can't get the quote right, that's always a good sign that something's not in your favor.
Thank you, Mr. Gartheiser. We'll hear from you in a moment when we change counsel. This case is submitted.